Blog Talk Radio.
Paperback Writer.
Where we showcase new authors. This is show number 121, and it is September 5th, 2022. I am your host, Tom Riedel, and co-host Terry Brown will be here with us shortly. Let's talk about a brief intro to today's show. Today, we're having on Thomas Tiver, who wrote Fortunate Son. He'll be along at about quarter after the hour. Now more about us. Here's where you can find us out there. Find us on Facebook, The Writer's Lounge, showcasing new authors. Find the book reviews of all of our current shows over at thomasriedel.net. That's thomasriedel.net. In the blog section, and the on-demand radio shows can be found there on the podcast page as well. Or go over to the Blog Talk Radio site and search for The Writer's Lounge. Find me on Twitter at TomRiedel56, and our email is writerslounge2020@yahoo.com. If you want to be a guest on the show and have your book reviewed, make sure you put guest request in the subject line, and we will get back to you. I want to make a mention here. There's been a lot of requests come on our show as of late, and sometimes those messages are not getting to the proper place. Again, the proper place is writerslounge2020@yahoo.com, and make sure you put guest request in the subject line so we can see that and then get back to you and schedule you for a show here on the broadcast. Special note, we can also now be heard on your Alexa device. Subscribe to Apple Podcasts and ask her to play The Writer's Lounge, showcasing new authors. I'd also like to put in a good plug for Goodreads and Readsy Discovery. They both do a great deal to help authors and readers alike, and I also review books on both sites as well. And with that, upcoming authors on the Writer's Lounge on September 19th, 2022, we'll have on author Troy Ratliff, who wrote Something Found, A Coin. The coin is found by a beachcomber with a metal detector. It's a coin the size of a penny, but it's a lot more than that. It's an adventure that will have you wanting more after the last page is read. On October 3rd, 2022, author Judalyn DeBornay will be here with Great Crossing, a very compelling and rich story of love, hardship, and endurance on the Great Frontier. This is historical fiction storytelling at its best, a return to 1807 and experience the turbulent beginning years of our nation, politics, slavery, and the people surrounding it all. I hope you'll tune in to these exciting upcoming shows. And now this is where I introduce our lovely and very talented co-host and pushing the right button here. And we should have Terry. Terry, are you there?
I'm here.
All right. Hey, before we get into it, I was just cruising through one of our future authors, and they had something on their page that I think you can relate to. I think we all can relate to. And it's just a little meme that says, when something goes wrong in your life, just yell, plot twist, and keep going.
Do you know what's funny is I saw that somewhere too, and I downloaded it, and it's on my computer right now.
I love that. And I know with all the difficulties and challenges that you guys are going through, that that would probably fit your life. And it certainly fits mine. But on to writer's topics, I understand you'd like to talk about inspiration.
Yeah, so I saw a quote today, and it said, if you wait for inspiration to write, you're not a writer, you're a waiter. And I thought, because do we just wait? Do we just kind of sit there and wait? I knew someone once who, the way they handled goals was they would, I felt like they just would like sit in a chair and wait for them to fall in their lap. You know, like this is what I want out of life. Okay, life, throw it in my lap. And, you know, I was thinking, is that the way we go about writing? And sometimes, you know, I hate to say it, I do. I just wait and wait and wait and wait for inspiration to come. But I think you have to kind of get out there and work at it. Inspiration isn't always easy, and I don't think it always falls in your lap. And I think that you can find it from teeny tiny things. You were talking about that a little bit today.
Right. And I think, too, what happens, even us authors have been, published, and we're not even starting out to write, but when we're trying to come up with an idea or a story, we get bogged down by, I want to call it writer's block, call it whatever you want to call it, but you just can't do it, and you wait and wait and wait. Sometimes it just takes sitting down and using your imagination. You know, even driving around town and looking at a person that's standing on a street corner, a homeless person, you look at that person and there's a story there. And, you know, not that you have to stop and interview the person, which I'd love to do at some point, but sometimes you just look at that person and sit down and see the clothes that they're wearing, look at the shoes that they're wearing, and just let the imagination go like a river would go. And just let it go. Don't sit down there with an outline. Just let your imagination take over and go wherever the heck it wants to go. I think sometimes that's what has to happen, but I also hear from a lot of aspiring writers and aspiring authors that say, well, I do have a story. I just haven't got the time to do it. Well, you just have to make the time, even if it's 5 or 10 minutes a day. Would you agree on that?
Oh, I absolutely agree that you know, you're never going to be a writer if you don't write. So if you have a story, no, I mean, you know, it'd be like saying, well, I'm going to be an artist someday if I ever find the time to pick up a paintbrush. I mean, if you want to write and you have a story, then you need to find the time to do that. For some people, you know, 10 minutes a day is exactly what they need. That would make me crazy. I'm more likely to need like 2 hours and maybe just 2 hours a week. So I write every Friday afternoon or something like that because I like longer blocks of time. But whatever it is that will work for you, that gives you that opportunity to get those words out of your head and onto paper. So, yeah, I mean, I think that inspiration can come in so many places. I've been inspired by a song on the radio, watching somebody pick something up on the beach. I was watching them inspect something, like, you know, they found something, and I began to wonder, well, what could they have found, and what other treasures have people found? And before long, my mind was going, and I was, you know, like, all into this crazy, like, young adult fiction story in my head about, you know, somebody who found a message in a bottle. And, I mean, you know, so it just went on, but that's where inspiration comes from, I think, is just everyday life. And if you're not getting it, it might mean that you need to take a little step back and really look around you. What do you see? What's out there that's inspirational for you?
Right. And also, I think what happens to a lot of us is everyday life gets in the way. There's stuff happening in our lives that are, some of them are just routine things that just kind of bog us down with thought. Some of it is critical stuff, you know, an illness, an injury, or something that we're dealing with a friend or a relative or a parent. And we just can't get into the mode of writing. So when that happens, I think what you need to do is you have to somehow, whatever way it is, you have to kind of clear your head of it. And how people do that varies from person to person. I think music can help. What is it that helps you to sit down? And I do know you have another novel coming out, but what helps you to sit down and to kind of clear your mind so you're able to write?
Yeah, I had someone ask me if I believed in writer's block. And I said, well, yeah, I believe in it, but I don't believe that it's because all of a sudden a writer has, like, just run out of ideas or there won't be more ideas. I think writer's block is simply you have something else that's pressing, that's more pressing than the creativity that normally goes on in your mind. So for me, the best way to get rid of writer's block is to address whatever that thing is. So, you know, if it's, you know, concern about someone, to do what I can to, you know, to check on them or to, you know, put that in a where I understand that I've done what I can do. You know, like, I just need to go in and kind of, like, fix that issue for me, at least to a point where I can say I've done what can be done now. And then it gives me the space to write again. I can't write if my mind is too busy on something else.
Right.
So it's just a matter of finding a way to kind of like clear that away for me and say, okay, I've now put this into the right perspective. You know, for instance, right now my husband has brain cancer and there's nothing I can do to fix that. You know, it's not going away anytime soon. So how, you know, if I had to wait for that to go away, I would never, you know, I might never write again. But I have started to be able to put it in perspective in other things. I know what we're doing. I know what I can do daily to help. And then because I've now given myself, you know, how am I going to handle this thing that's going on in my life, the space to write is opening up again.
Right, right. Yeah, it's a process, and I think with some effort, I think if you want to write, to kind of boil it all up here, is to just sit down and start. Even if you can write for 5 minutes, just do it. Well, let's get on to the main event, and today's main event would be author Thomas Tibber. He wrote the book Fortunate Son, and I want to remind everybody out there, if you're listening live, you can call in at area code 914-219-0868. And my review of Fortunate Son: Reed Lawson is an ROTC cadet dealing with the anguish and separation of his MIA father, who is a Navy pilot in the Vietnam War. He's been missing for 3 years, and Reed can't get his dad out of his thoughts. He's there as Reed grapples with all the unrest around him. Anti-war protests and the promoters of war converge on one another, and Reed finds it difficult to blend in, especially with those who oppose the war. As fate would have it, he is advised by his ROTC commander to involve himself in community service, and he soon volunteers at a drug crisis center after becoming attracted to a young feminist who also works there. A conflict arises when he sets out to rescue a teenage girl from her own demons of drugs and family problems. This coming-of-age story takes place in the turbulent spring of 1970, and there is much happening in the minds of the young and old that will shape their lives forever. What will become of Reed's dad, and how will Reed be able to live in the changing times that swirl around him? The author uses many props in his efforts to transport the reader back into the 1960s and 1970s. He populates his prose with the mention of books and songs that were prevalent back during the era, and certainly the chapters, the characters were very well developed around those cultural themes as well. The story flows nicely and conflict is well placed between the characters, but for me, the tension and most of the interest peaks near the end, and it's here where the story solidifies into a solid 4-star review. I think it's very important for readers and writers to not lose a sense of history in our stories, and Thomas Tibber brings it to us here. Well done. And now it is our pleasure to welcome Thomas Tibber to the Writer's Lounge. I will reach over and let him in the door and welcome him into the Writer's Lounge. Thomas, are you there?
I am here. Thank you very much for inviting me.
Yeah, I have to pause because sometimes you run into technical glitches, and sometimes, for whatever reason, they don't walk through that door. So I welcome you to the Writer's Lounge, and Terry and I both welcome you here. Yes, can you hear me?
I can hear you. You can hear me.
Yes, very good. So let's get started. Thomas, when did you begin your journey of being a writer and eventually an author?
Well, I guess for the past four decades, I guess that reveals my age, but for the past four decades, I've been a writer and a video producer, focusing mostly on education and training sorts of programs, documentaries. And I would say in terms of writing, at least half that time was script writing, screenwriting, for training sorts of products and educational sorts of things and documentaries. So that's kind of my background. Once I left the psychology realm, after I got my master's degree, I kind of switched to documentary filmmaking, and that kind of expanded into all kinds of training sorts of programs.
Wow, that's a lot of history there. Did you have an interest when you were a child at all in writing?
I did have an interest in writing when I was a child, probably not to the same degree as the most literary people you've read about. I don't think I did a lot of journaling, but I was a very avid reader. I kind of one of those kids that escaped into a book. I dealt with adolescence by reading as many books as I possibly could, and I did a little bit of short story writing, but I wouldn't say that I was obsessed with it very young, but I was a very avid book reader.
Uh-huh. Very good. Terry, what do you got for Tom?
Yeah, so I want to know what compelled you to write Fortunate Son. What's behind this story?
Well, a couple of different things. One, it was a short story. I guess it started off as a short story back in my early 20s about a couple of incidents that happened when I was in college. And then I revisited when I became more of a screenwriter, I revisited the story in a couple of versions of a screenplay. Probably the most recent was in 2016. I wrote a screenplay pretty much like the existing story. And I met with a consultant in L.A. Who basically said that this would make a better novel than a movie. It's kind of internal. It's a character-driven story. You may want to try to do that instead of a feature film. So I basically embarked on the process of turning a screenplay into a novel, which is something I've never tried before. I've written a few short stories, dribs and drafts of pieces of novels, but I've never tried to actually sustain from start to finish something that could conceivably, hopefully, be publishable.
Wow. Yeah, it kind of, I think Terry would, I find this interesting that a lot of authors go from writing novels to wanting screenplays of their books to be done, but you kind of went in the other direction.
I did. I'm very much, in terms of writing, I have still as a technical editor, writing nonfiction, PR, brochures, manuals of every kind, how-to. But I would say that most of my creative writing has been screenwriting, and that's including many dramas, short dramas for training purposes. So that is pretty much my background. And to convert something to screenwriting, it was really quite a pretty intense challenge, I have to say.
Wow.
And, you know, it was a lot of fun, but it was quite a challenge. But I did start off with a screenplay.
Yeah. As you mentioned, as well as being a writer, you've had an interesting life so far. Among other things, you worked in a mental hospital on a crisis hotline, which inspired you to write Fortunate Son. But much like the characters in your story, how did you deal with the stress of that job? That must have been rough.
Well, that was, I had two very short stints in psychiatric units. One was a psychiatric unit of a big city hospital that was in Georgia. The other one was a psychiatric unit in Chicago, adolescent psychiatric unit. And that was during the time that I got a bachelor's degree in psychology and a master's degree in counseling psychology. And these were pretty intense experiences that pretty much affected me. I pretty much thought I was in way over my head, to tell you the truth. I think I was way over my head in terms of a young person that was relatively sheltered, being thrown into situations where there was just a whole lot of stuff going on. So those were distant experiences, but I would say that what really informed this novel is for the past 22 years, not including the 3 years of retirement, I did a lot of work for the U.S. military in the areas of suicide prevention, sexual assault prevention, other kinds of traumatic sorts of subjects, PTSD, helping the military by creating training programs, actual courses. So I would say that a lot of what I brought to this story that goes well beyond the initial experiences I had as a 20-year-old would be more recent experiences deeply involved in the creation of these courses and delving into these topics in the last 15 years.
Wow. Did you, you dealt with all this trauma from people on the phone, much like Reed did in your novel. Did it keep you up at night? Did you have trouble sleeping? I mean, how did you cope with all of that?
I found it fairly easy to sleep because this was a good avenue for dealing with some of the emotions that came out of my work. So I find writing to be a release from stress rather than instigating the stress, because I think that I came to realize that the work that I participated in the last 15, 20 years, I would say since 9/11, was very, very stressful, and it brought up a lot of issues. So I found it I found writing to be quite a relief, even though it was very challenging. I found it wonderful to sleep afterwards, except for the fact that often the characters would wake me up at 5 o'clock in the morning and they had something to say to me.
Yeah, it happens
and,
to the best of us.
A couple of times they were kind of giving me a hard time. So.
Happens to the best of us, doesn't it, Terry?
It sure does. My characters are constantly talking to me. So I see that you also wrote a screenplay from your love of the game of golf. And so it seems that like screenplays is something you feel more comfortable with. What do you think are the big differences between writing a screenplay and writing a novel?
Well, a screenplay, first of all, a screenplay is exists in only what you see and you hear. So if you're sitting in a theater, you're sitting in a in front of your TV, all you know is what you see and hear, and then what you project into what you see and hear. Whereas a novel, you're being told a lot of things that you technically do not see and hear. So it, you know, there's far more internal. So that's number one. The other thing that I realized is that a screenplay is by definition in the third person. The third person, because you are the viewer and you're objectively seeing everything that's on the screen, and the director and all the actors and the director can't really direct your perception. They can't direct your eye. They can't direct your focus that much, because you can choose to focus on your favorite actor or actress, but it's very much in the third person, whereas I thought one of the biggest challenges in novel writing is the point of view, that basically you're directing the reader into whatever point of view you want that reader to inhabit. I found that to be very, very difficult, and it's quite different than screenwriting. In screenwriting, there is often a perspective, but it's kind of subtle. But you cannot control everything that the reader thinks and perceives the way you can with a novel, because all you know is what the narrator tells you.
Right.
I don't know if that made that more confusing or less.
No, it hits it home, I think. I think Terry would agree, but I think also we hear a lot. I hear this a lot. I don't know if it works the other way, but I hear it a lot, is when you have a novel and that it's made into a movie and you're watching the movie, or somebody critiques the movie, they'll say, read the book, it was better than the movie. The one author that comes to mind is Stephen King. And I think what you mentioned really hit it home, as in the actor. What you didn't mention is that the actor usually has the job of portraying the emotion on his face rather than a description in a paragraph during that same scene. Would you agree with that?
Yeah, I've had people tell me that if they read the book first, they often are disappointed by the movie version. However, if they've seen the movie version first, they might not have the same reaction when they read a book. I've seen movies recently that I thought were better than the book. And I've read books where in a book you create your own movie in your mind, and in your mind's eye you create your own movie. And so invariably you can be disappointed when the movie is being cast, unless you're kind of flexible and realize that, well, the director made different choices. They made different creative choices. For me, the difficulty was I've done casting. I've been involved in every part of movie making from my own script. So when I cast the actor, and let's say you want a romance, well, you just cast people who are attractive and have good chemistry, and don't worry, they're going to work it out. But in a book, you can't do that, because you have to make the romance come alive somehow, just in words. You can't just cast two of your favorite actors and tell them to, create chemistry on the screen somehow. So.
Right. The one of the things that we talk about on the Writer's Lounge, and we've discussed it a few times, I think Terry and I have talked about it too, is show, don't tell. And that's sort of when you're writing the novel, you want to remind everybody that, you know, we have to show you and not tell you, and you leave it up to the reader's imagination to kind of fill in the picture that you're trying to, you know, trying to portray on the page. That was very well, very, very well put, Thomas. I also know you have a partner involved in your endeavors. Can you tell us about her and what her role in creating Fortunate Son?
Well, my sweet wife is my collaborator on this. She's a wonderful editor. She's a wonderful sounding board for all kinds of ideas. Often people have asked us after several years of going back and forth and collaborating on this, are you still happily married? I'm happy to say yes, we are still happily married. But we did have a lot of arguments, and I came down as the I'm the novelist. It's my name on the cover. I have veto power, but I couldn't have done it without her. And in addition to the many beta readers and the many editors, but we went back and forth on a lot of things, and the creative tension is good. I think that's what keeps you going, really.
Yeah, Terry.
Waking up,
Terry.
You know.
Terry, did you and Bruce have that same chemistry?
No. So what's interesting is my husband is an engineer, and so his creativity is very different than mine. I'm not saying he's not creative. It just comes out in a very different way. He would be really good if I needed like technical assistance in terms of if I was writing, you know, maybe a spy scene and I wanted to be sure that I was getting the facts right. So that would be good. He's more or less my cheerleader. I mean, as far as he's concerned, I'm the best writer that's ever lived. And so, you know, all of my books should be number one bestsellers and they should all be turned into movies and everyone should know my name. And so that's kind of his role in my process is to stand behind me and cheerlead.
My wife, Maria, she's an excellent, she's the literary person in our family. She reads many, many literary books, and she's also an excellent poet. And so I think that in terms of literary writing, she was very inspirational. I come at this from a screenwriting point of view. I have certain strengths that I think I have, but what she really brings to it is what I would consider a literary sensibility, a command of English language, and she's quite a good poet. To me, a person who can write good poetry is just an utter mystery to me. It just seems like an impossibility.
Go ahead, Terry. You get the next question.
All righty. So do you think our country and our people learned anything from the age of Vietnam?
I would like to hope that we have learned something since the age of Vietnam. Many people pointed out that some of these issues resonate for them. I think that we have become hopefully less naive. I think we've learned something. I'm trying to be optimistic now about that. I hope that we've learned that this kind of involvement in other countries can have serious consequences. And on the home front, I think we've learned a lot. I think in terms of the psychology that's part of this book, I think that we have learned a lot. There's much less stigma surrounding mental illness. I think there's a lot of awareness of the trauma, of PTSD. So I think that it hasn't disappeared. The stigmas haven't disappeared, but we have. I think we're a lot smarter about some of these issues than we were then. And as far as our foreign policy and in general, I hope we've learned something. I think that I hope we have.
I think we've also got more respect here back home for our veterans when they return from war than we did when they returned from Vietnam. Would you agree with that, Thomas?
I would definitely agree. I think one of the incidents that I resonated with in this particular story is that during that time I was in the Air Force ROTC. The book features the Navy ROTC. I was in the Air Force ROTC. And I very clearly remember, as I portrayed in a couple of little scenes, the main character walking from the ROTC building back to his dorm, in my case it was a fraternity house, and having basically a lot of dirty looks attracting my way, coming my way, because I'm wearing my dress uniform, my Air Force uniform. So the contempt for the people, you know, in uniform among some Americans, and the contempt for returning veterans or a denial that they are having problems or a desire to push the dirt underneath the rug, whatever it was. I think there's definitely less of that for sure right now, keeping in mind that we now have a volunteer army. At that time, it was a draft. So
right.
I do think there's more respect for the military. I think there's a more awareness that what most people are objecting to are the decisions of their leaders, not the soldiers themselves.
Yeah, as far as learning, I think that's a big part of the equation. I think we've learned. I'm not so sure about the rest of it. We still fight. We still war. Sometimes when we have to, and sometimes when we shouldn't. And Vietnam, of course, is still a debatable war with a lot of Americans. So I think, we just laid out pretty much what we learned most from it in a positive way. And I think there's still a lot of negativity surrounding how we enter war and how we deal with war after it starts.
Yes.
Yeah. So we were just talking, Terry and I, before we went on with you here. How do you get yourself in the state of mind of being able to sit down and write a novel like you did?
I think I was listening to what you said before we came on the air, and because I've had to make a living as a writer, I don't have the luxury. I never had the luxury, at least in my job, of waiting for inspiration. I just had to sit down at 9 a.m., I better do something, or they're not going to pay me. And, this was true of screenplays. I wrote screenplays for dramas that were designed for dramatic purposes. And basically, if I didn't produce something, I wasn't going to get paid. So I don't think you can wait for inspiration. I think you have to be committed to sitting down and expending perspiration. Just doing whatever it takes to do something. But I don't think that, writing is a little bit like exercise. If I have to feel like I'm only going to go to the gym when I feel like it, I don't think I would ever go. But once I go there and start doing something, okay. So, but I think that the writer's block, you also mentioned writer's block. For me, writer's block translates into frustration. I can't do something. I can't say what I want to say. I don't know what's going on with the story. I don't know what's going on with the characters. So I experience it as frustration.
Mm-hmm.
And the way I've dealt with the frustration is, just usually ask questions. What am I frustrated about? What's the problem? And also for me, I think screenwriting, one thing with screenwriting, you probably notice this when you watch movies. I'm sure it's the same with novels. A good movie is very structured. It's very much almost invariably a three-act formula. It's very much structured, and often I go back to structure. Like there's something bothering me. The problem is either with the structure of the story or something wrong with the characters. And most of the time I found you haven't explored these characters in enough depth. That's why you don't know what to do.
Those
are two
Terry?
Things I've discovered. Is that, you have to I had to go deeper rather than running around looking for other ideas.
Mm-hmm. I know I wanted to ask you, since you talk about screenwriting, what have you done in screenwriting that we may have watched on television?
There's nothing that I've done in commercial screenwriting. I sold long, long time ago. Sold a script that was never produced. What I refer to with screenwriting is all for training purposes. For the military, we would create courses that consisted of documentary pieces, dramatic pieces, and in most cases, in-course delivery of content. So we used to do movies that were anywhere from 20 to 40 minutes. We used to joke that we called them Hollywood and the Potomac. But in every respect, they were like little movies. So I can always send you links of stuff that people have pirated away from the military and put on YouTube. But those were screenplays that were designed for training, internal training purposes. Screenplays, I think I sold one screenplay, and other than that, nothing that you would see on TV. A couple of things I can give you a link for on YouTube. But the process pretty much the same. The process is pretty much the same, but it's anchored very much in the reality of what the military is experiencing and the real people that we interviewed. It's very much about making training points and training objectives. At the same time, it has to be captivating and entertaining enough to be dramatic in its own right.
I'd like to see Fortunate Son as a movie. I would love to see that. Terry,
well,
what do you got?
Concluded,
oh,
we've
go
concluded
ahead,
that it won't make a a single movie. It would be possibly done as a 4-part series. If I were,
okay,
if you were asking me like a screenwriter, you brought me this book and I had never read it before, I would say this would be a 4-part limited series, 4 1-hour episodes that correspond to each act in the book. But I don't think I don't think I can translate this into a feature film because it still retains three parallel plot lines, actually 4. So I couldn't do it. Somebody with more skill than I could possibly do.
Mm-hmm.
Well,
Terry?
So speaking of skills, what was the most difficult aspect of writing Fortunate Son, and then what was the most enjoyable part for you?
I think the enjoyable part for me is always the things that I think I'm not bad, pretty good in doing. I think I'm pretty good with structure, and I also am pretty good with, I think, with dialogue, because so much of our training screenwriting depends on dialogue. So in terms of scenes, creation of scenes, I think the two most difficult parts of this process, actually all parts were difficult because I had never written a novel before. I'd say the most difficult part, number one, was figuring out the point of view, selecting the correct point of view. I found that to be very, very tricky to decide. So I finally decided on a certain point of view, which is what the experts call third person limited. And the point of view is third person in the sense that it's not first person. You're talking about you're talking about people. There's a narrator talking about people. You're not telling the story yourself. But the point of view has to be very limited in the extent that the main character is in every single scene. All you know is what he knows or what he's expected to have known, or in a few cases, what is commonly known at the time. But I found that to be very, very difficult to stay within the point of view of the main character, and that was a big challenge. And I think the second challenge in writing is to, Tom mentioned earlier, is to show, not tell, and a lot of it is what not to say rather than what to say. Often I would say too much, and my wife would say, I think you're telling the reader what to think. I think you need to not say certain things. So it's kind of not so much the stuff you want to put in, but what is it you're going to take out? So I did a lot of taking out.
Yeah, I had been told so many times, you've got to trust your reader. You have to trust your reader to feel what they need to feel and to catch on where they need to catch on. And it's like, oh, but I want to make sure that they're doing that. So I agree. You do have to know when to stop and allow your reader to do the rest.
That was pretty hard because I think there's a saying, you fall in love with your baby, so you have to kill some of them.
Right.
Often I would take things out because it was explaining too much. And you want to involve the reader in creating their own version of the story rather than my wife would often say, I think you're spoon-feeding too much, you know?
Mm-hmm.
It's good that
I think that's very important. Trust the reader.
It's good that you have that other ear there to help you when you're writing, as far as like maybe doing your, but you go from dialogue to their description, and you got to know when to go from dialogue to description and how to balance all that. And I think that's very challenging. I love dialogue, but I don't want to play on that too much, so then I revert to descriptive writing. But that leads into my next question, Thomas, is about the editing, publishing, and marketing experiences that you've encountered over the course of writing Fortunate Son. Any regrets after reflecting on that process?
No, I really enjoy it. I find it to be a quite difficult process, but there are many tools that we discovered along the way. There's a couple of websites. You may be familiar with Reedsy. Reedsy is an online platform that offers services to writers. There's another one called Fiverr. So we hired a couple of people who do manuscript analysis. Two people who do editing, copy editing, at least a dozen people who do beta reading. They'll read a book and give you their feedback. And so we found very good resources. We went back and forth many times with these people. They're very, very helpful in addition to other research. As far as the publishing process goes, we found on this Fiverr website, F-I-V-E-R-R, and Reedsy, they have every conceivable service that you can want. One of the ones that we needed near the end was people who lay out, since this is a self-published book, people who do layout. They take your Word document and they lay it out. And that was a process that was went very smoothly. Now, for me, it was probably a little smoother than for some writers, because as part of my work, as my job and my career, I did publish books. I did work with our layout people. They're just people in my office, so kind of familiar with laying out books. But these services are readily available on the Internet. The cover design, we hire people to do a cover design, another person to do the layout, final proofreading and all that. And then the only, the publishing, the Kindle publishing platform seem to be fairly straightforward. So I think these services are straightforward. As long as you have some patience with various technical sorts of issues that luckily I had personal career experience with, you know, what happens when you convert a book into a Word document, into InDesign or PDF and all that, I was pretty familiar with those mechanics.
Good.
They might be frustrating frustrating for other people.
I'm also with Reedsy. I am a reviewer on Reedsy, and I've worked with a couple of the editors. At least I've talked to a couple of the editors over there, and they do a really good job with authors. And I'm going to be looking to them, I think, in the future for anything that I might want to get out there as far as my next publication. But moving on here, we haven't got a lot of time left here, but what do you do for fun when you're not writing?
Well, I like to exercise. I do a lot of exercise. Now that I've retired, during this process, I was retired when I began it. Then I went back to work for two more projects, and then I came back and re-retired and finished this project. So it's a wonderful question you're asking me, because it was on March 3rd that I pressed publish on this book. And in the past 6 months, I've been trying to figure out what do you do when you're retired, because I kind of treated this book as my job. Even when I was retired, I had the same daily routine. So I'm just trying to figure out, well, what I do for fun. I like to travel, exercise. I'm getting back into playing golf. I like to hike. I like to read a lot, the luxury of reading things. If I'm curious about something, there's nothing I have to do. I can read book after book. And I'm looking at two other projects that I may want to do, but they're novel, two other novel projects. Again, they will take a lot of effort, so I don't want to start them unless I can finish. So I'm kind of looking for the energy to start on those. But
all right. In regards to what you'd like to do, I noticed that in your novel there are several musical references in Fortunate Son. Any favorite bands from that time?
Well, I think when I really like the – I think my era was from 1969 to 1973. I would say Crosby, Stills, Nash & Young. The ballad people, James Taylor, those folks, those were, of course, the Jefferson Airplane and that era. But I like music of all types. My daughter and I, my daughter's a singer, and we love musicals. So often I would write this novel listening to it as a soundtrack. And so the selection of songs was a lot of fun, which songs for which scene. And often I would play it in the background just to kind of get in the mood. I think I played some of the songs, Creedence Clearwater Revival. In many cases, I played songs that were existing at the time. And those are songs from my formative years. And in some cases, I was able to use the song. In other cases, copyright prevented me from saying much about the song. So, but that kind of late hippie era, the early, before the mid-70s era.
Uh-huh.
The Who?
Terry, what do you got for Thomas?
Well, I was just curious, what do you need to be to think of yourself as a successful author?
I think that I have developed the self-validation through this process to think that this is something I can do. If I work, give it 110% effort. I think so far I've gotten enough positive feedback to believe that I am no longer delusional when I say I think I can write a novel. I do find it to be very, very difficult, but I no longer feel like I'm delusional. As long as I stick to something, I believe that I do have the perseverance to do it. And so I think I would say I'm cautiously confident.
Good. Good. Yeah, I think Terry and I would both agree that delusional comes into play when we sit down to do the first novel and trying to get it out there. I think Terry was, for a while, I think she was on cloud nine and maybe a little delusional after it hit the bookstores. Isn't that correct, Terry?
Oh, yeah, but see, I still feel that way, so I don't know that that's ever going to go away. I got my author copy for my next book, and I held it to my chest for 24 hours. Like, I couldn't let it go. All I did was smile. So, yeah. But I think there's just something really wonderful about finally seeing something that you've spent all that time and effort doing, and you get to hold it in your hands, kind of the culmination of all those efforts. I really hope that I never lose that feeling. Like, I love the fact that you can work really hard at something and in the end you have something that you can show for it. And it just makes me feel good to have made that accomplishment.
I think the best advice I got regarding this entire novel process, I read in some book, I think it was about screenwriting. They said, don't try to please an audience. Don't try to, necessarily write to change an audience. Write something that's going to change your life. So I found that writing this particular book in a certain way has changed my life. So I think that that was the validation that I experienced from it.
Yes.
Fantastic.
Well, Thomas, this is winding down here, and got just a couple more questions for you, but this is your Oscar moment, as we always say in the Writer's Lounge. Any parting words of advice to aspiring authors? And would you like to thank anyone out there for the successes you've enjoyed in life so far?
Well, the list of people to thank for my successes is far too long. All my family, all my friends, everybody I've ever worked with, everybody I've ever met, all the people that I met during the process of working, doing my job, you know, all those, just kind of everybody, but the whole world out there, I have to thank with a lot of gratitude for everything that's happened. What was the other question I got there?
And any parting words of advice?
I would say that I found the success comes from, again, perspiration, not inspiration.
Yeah.
I think that it comes from just working as hard as possible, and that's about it. I think somebody once, I think there's a famous writer, addressed some audience of writers, and he asked everybody, Who here wants to be a writer? Can you raise your hands? And everybody raised their hands. But what are you doing here listening to me? Get back home and attach your butt to the seat. Just do it.
Very good. How can our listeners contact you? Where do they find you the quickest out there on the internet?
Well, we have a little website, keyboardcommunications.com. You can find me there. I have my Instagram is Thomas Tibor Author. I have a Twitter. I think it's at I don't know. I never mess with Twitter. It's at, you can look it up there. I can't remember what it is, but it's Thomas Tibor Author at Instagram and TiborCommunications.com. I still retain my LinkedIn under Thomas Tibor, and those are the primary ones.
Very good. Thomas, Terry,
oh, you can reach me at email thomastibor57@gmail.com. I'm happy to communicate by email.
And that works. It's the old-fashioned way, I think, today, that more people use social media. So anyways, we've appreciated you being on. And Terry and I both wish you much success in the future. It's been a pleasure talking to you and learning about screenwriting and novel writing, and how those two conflict with one another is something I don't think we've talked a lot about on this show over the years. So thank you once again for being on the Writer's Lounge.
Thank you very much for inviting me. I really enjoyed it. Have a great
day. Okay, take care, Thomas.
Take care.
Yep, bye. So Terry, there goes Thomas Tibor, and he wrote the book, The Fortunate Son. I hope you can get out there and get the book. And I want to ask you just briefly, what's your thoughts on today's show?
Oh, I mean, I think it went really well. I was really interested to talk with someone who did it the other way. You know, like you said, normally most of the authors we speak to have written a book and then taken that novel and then tried to find a way to turn it into a screenplay. And then here's someone who worked at it from the other side, where they started it as a screenplay and turned it into a book. And
yeah,
because of that process, he had a lot of really good insights that,
yes,
you know, made me really think about, you know, I keep saying that I want Sunflowers Beneath the Snow to be, you know, a movie. And then I wonder, wow, I have a lot of in the headspace in that novel. And I wonder, how would a screenwriter go about pulling that out of the characters' heads and actually onto the screen? And it's a very interesting concept.
Yes, we learned a lot from today's show. And next time around, on September 19th, 2022, author Troy Radliff will be here. Something Found, A Coin. We're Going to Florida. A coin is found by a beachcomber and a metal detector. It's a coin the size of a penny, but it's a lot more than that. Tune in for more of that. And once again, Terry, thank you. And it's been great having our little break, but I'm enjoying being back on the show. And until then, Terry and I will see you next time on the Writer's Lounge, where we encourage writers and readers to keep the pen and eyes to the page and to let the story begin. Enjoy yourselves and be well, and good night.
If they asked me, I could write a book about the way you walk and whisper and look. I could write a preface on how we met, so the world would never forget. And the simple secret of the plot, it's just to tell you that I love you a lot.